Good morning. The 2014 outbreak of Ebola virus disease is the largest Ebola outbreak in history and has become CDC's largest outbreak response ever. However, prior to September 2014, no cases of Ebola had been diagnosed in the U.S. That all changed on September 30th, when the first case of Ebola was confirmed in a traveler recently returned from Liberia, as we've just heard. Within 15 days, two additional cases were confirmed in healthcare workers who had cared for the index case. And then a fourth case was confirmed in a healthcare worker recently returned from Guinea. Delays in patient isolation after symptom onset, when Ebola transmission was possible, raised concerns about the potential for exposures in the community. On October 27th, CDC issued interim guidance for movement and monitoring of persons with potential Ebola virus exposure. Guidance explained who should be monitored, for how long, and what monitoring should identify based on known characteristics of Ebola. The objectives of this analysis are to describe the monitoring and reporting conducted by U.S. health departments, to estimate the number of persons monitored, and estimate the completeness of monitoring. So, by a show of hands, how many of you in the audience worked on active monitoring at the local, state, or federal level? Okay, it looks like just about everyone did. Well, you probably know what I'm going to say. I don't know how many of you felt like this at the beginning. This is the reaction of some of my colleagues who formed the monitoring unit with the Georgia Health Department when they were told that they needed to keep track of every traveler from Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea each day for 21 days. So let's examine the methodology of monitoring. There are many parts to the process, so I'll use a common scenario to walk through them. All travelers coming from the affected countries are routed through one of five specific U.S. airports. At the airport, travelers are screened and assigned a risk category. Travelers receive a check and report Ebola or care kit. This kit includes information on symptoms of Ebola, a thermometer, and contact information should the traveler have questions or develop symptoms. After November, a prepaid cell phone was also provided. Travelers are determined to be in one of three possible risk categories based on exposure history. Low but not zero risk included travelers arriving from an affected country who did not have any known risk factors for Ebola. Also at low risk were healthcare workers caring for symptomatic patients with Ebola in the U.S. while using appropriate personal protective equipment. Persons at some risk included most persons with known risk factors for Ebola. This was most commonly healthcare workers caring for patients in the affected countries. Persons at high risk had more overt exposures, such as a needle stick injury or contact with bodily fluids while caring for an Ebola patient. CDC sent information on risk category and contact information to the jurisdiction of the traveler's final destination. The person's risk category determined the type of monitoring that would be conducted. There are two basic types of monitoring. Active monitoring includes twice daily checks for fever and Ebola-compatible symptoms and daily health status updates to health officials. Direct active monitoring is similar to active monitoring, except that health status should be reported twice daily and persons should be directly observed at least once per day. Direct observation could be conducted in person. Alternatively, remote visualization could be used. All monitoring was conducted until the 21st day following the last exposure. Monitoring data is collected by state and local health departments and ultimately reported to CDC at predetermined intervals. This table summarizes monitoring and reporting by risk categories as shown on the column headings. Active monitoring is recommended for low-risk travelers. However, for low-risk healthcare workers, those caring for patients in the U.S., direct active monitoring was recommended. Direct active monitoring is also recommended for all persons at some or high risk. Monitoring data on all persons at low risk were reported weekly and in aggregate form. Monitoring data for persons at some and high risk were reported daily. Individual reports were made for each person in these risk categories. The data presented here are based on the monitoring that occurred from November 3, 2014 through March 8, 2015. Recall, CDC issued guidance on active monitoring on October 27th. Within 7 days, all 50 states and 2 local jurisdictions were monitoring relevant persons and reporting activities to CDC. As of March 8th, over 10,000 persons have been monitored. The estimate currently exceeds 15,000. This graph displays the number of persons monitored each week by risk category. The reporting week is on the x-axis, and the number of persons is on the y-axis. A median of 1,710 persons were monitored each week. Overall, 92% were low-risk travelers. 5% were low-risk healthcare workers, and 3% were persons at some or high risk. Note that the vast majority of low-risk healthcare workers were monitored by mid-December, following care of patients diagnosed with Ebola in the U.S. and patients flown here for treatment from West Africa. Examining monitoring for persons at some or high risk, you'll notice 2 increases that occurred in mid-December and early February. These increases correspond with the return of U.S. Public Health Service teams that staffed an Ebola treatment unit in Liberia, as we've already heard. Of the total persons monitored, the overwhelming majority had complete monitoring in any given week. The number of people with incomplete monitoring, indicated in red, was low and improved over time. There were 2 ways that incomplete monitoring could occur. First was when a health department could not make initial contact after arrival in the jurisdiction. Second was when a gap in monitoring of over 48 hours occurred once initial contact had already been made. This graph illustrates the percent of persons who were monitored completely marked by the red line. Note the scale on the right ranges from 90 to 100%. On average, 99% of persons were monitored completely, and this proportion increased over time. However, the high overall proportion of persons monitored completely does not always accurately reflect the experience of individual jurisdictions, some of whom had greater challenges with monitoring. Let's examine this more closely. So this graph displays the number of people with incomplete monitoring in any reporting week. In November, an average of 45 persons per week nationwide had incomplete monitoring. By February, that average had decreased to 3 per week. Early on, challenges in making and maintaining contact included inaccurate and incomplete contact information and individual mobility among households, particularly in communities of West African origin. During November and December, a number of efforts were instituted to address these challenges, including improved collection of contact information at the airport and education of incoming travelers. The distribution of prepaid cell phones began on November 30th. We cannot say how much the cell phones specifically improved monitoring, but the data suggests that the combination of activities had a beneficial effect. Doubtlessly, procedural improvements at the local level also had an effect. Let's look at the two ways in which incomplete monitoring could occur. The number of persons with no initial contact is represented by the blue line, whereas the number of persons with gaps of 48 hours or more in monitoring is represented by the red line. The most drastic improvement in the ability to make initial contact is noted through November and December, directly corresponding with improved data collection on entry and distribution of cell phones to travelers. Where were persons monitored? This map displays the number of persons monitored by state and local jurisdictions. Darker blue indicates more persons under monitoring. Five jurisdictions monitored 54% of persons. They were in decreasing order: New York City, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Virginia. New York City monitored more than 2,000 people during this time period, but all jurisdictions participated in the monitoring program. So overall, jurisdictions rapidly implemented complex monitoring systems and began reporting to CDC within 7 days. Over 10,000, and now over 15,000 persons have been monitored with minimal incomplete monitoring. Changes to the process, such as distributing prepaid cell phones to incoming travelers, likely led to improvements in monitoring completion over time. These results provide substantial evidence for the ability of state, territorial, and local health departments to conduct a sustained public health response. It is recommended that the procedures developed for monitoring be considered for use in similar public health responses. Since 2002, nearly $9 billion have been distributed to health departments so they can effectively respond to public health threats. CDC and health departments have worked together to build epidemiologic and surveillance capabilities. The successful and rapid implementation of this national monitoring system, something that had never been done before on this scale, demonstrates the progress that has been made in preparing for public health emergencies. Thank you.